Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for November 2012. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Breskin Parr LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. Unlike every other podcast to date where we've had an interesting guest, this month you're stuck with me. And I'm going to be talking about an interesting case that was handed down by the Supreme Court of Canada in November 2012 called Teva Canada against Pfizer Canada. It involved the patent which covered the use of sildenafil citrate for the treatment of erectile dysfunction, sometimes known as the Viagra patent. Teva wanted to launch a generic sildenafil product in Canada. Pfizer brought an application under the Patent Medicine Notice of Compliance proceedings to get an order to prevent the Minister of Health from granting a notice of compliance to Teva, allowing it to launch and market the sildenafil product. In the case, Pfizer argued that if Teva was allowed to launch and sell its sildenafil generic product, it would be infringing Claim 7, which covered the use of sildenafil citrate for the treatment of erectile dysfunction. Teva argued that Claim 7 was invalid, and the Supreme Court agreed. The Supreme Court held that Claim 7 was lacking support in the disclosure because Pfizer did not expressly identify sildenafil as being the only product that it had found to be useful in the treatment of erectile dysfunction. By not expressly disclosing that sildenafil citrate was found useful in the treatment of erectile dysfunction, the court held that Pfizer had not, quote, correctly and fully described the invention and its operation or use as contemplated by the inventor, a requirement of Section 27(3)(a) of the Canadian Patent Act. By not disclosing the only compound that it found to work, Pfizer had failed to live up to its side of the bargain theory of patents, that is, that the patentee has to disclose the invention as part of the patent specification. It's normal to see patents that have nested claims or cascading claims, broad claims followed by dependent claims that have additional limitations which progressively narrow the scope of the claim. In one of its narrowest claims, the Pfizer patent claimed the use of sildenafil for the treatment of erectile dysfunction. In the next broader claim, Claim 5, it included what was called 9 especially preferred compounds. Claim 4 was broader still, and contained what were called particularly preferred compounds. Claim 3, broader still, more preferred compounds. Claim 2, broader still, preferred compounds, until Claim 1 contained what was estimated to be 260 times 10 to the 18 compounds. The Pfizer patent stated at page 10 of the disclosure, quote, "In man, certain especially preferred compounds," those were the 9 in Claim 5, "have been tested orally in both single-dose and multiple-dose volunteer studies. Moreover, patient studies conducted thus far have confirmed that one of the especially preferred compounds induces penile erection in impotent males," end quote. Nowhere in the patent did Pfizer specifically identify sildenafil as the compound referred to in the second sentence, the only compound that Pfizer had found to work. Nor did the patent say that Pfizer had not shown that any of the other compounds had been tested and shown to treat erectile dysfunction. The Supreme Court of Canada judgment has an undercurrent that makes you think that the Supreme Court thought that Pfizer had been deceptive, that it had done something wrong. I think this was based upon statements made by Justice Kellen in his reasons for the hearing in the federal court in the first instance. At paragraph 118, he said, quote, "Patent 446 does not disclose that the many other claims and compounds in the patent are, quote, red herrings, end quote. That is, therefore, claim compounds which have been found not to work for treating erectile dysfunction," end quote. What's fascinating is that there wasn't any evidence at the original hearing that any of the other compounds claimed in the Pfizer patent did not work. As a matter of fact, there was a small amount of evidence taken from other proceedings that one of the other compounds, the compound of Claim 6, did work. It appears that Justice Kellen may have been confused, and in assuming that because only one compound had been shown to have been used, and there was no evidence showing that the other compounds did work, that therefore the other compounds didn't work. Justice Kellen concluded, and I quote, why did the disclosure not simply state that the compound in Claim 7 was sildenafil? The patent plays hide-and-seek with the reader. The reader is expected to look for the needle in the haystack or the tree in the forest. Under Canadian law, the disclosure of a patent must do two things. Number one, it must describe the invention. What is the invention? And number two, it must provide an enabling disclosure to enable the public to make it or use it once the patent expires. Here's what Justice LaBelle, who wrote the unanimous decision of the Supreme Court of Canada, said. Quote, "The public's right to proper disclosure was denied in this case, since the claims ended with two individually claimed compounds, those were claims 6 and 7, thereby obscuring the true invention. The disclosure failed to state in clear terms what the invention was. Pfizer gained a benefit from the act, exclusive monopoly rights, while withholding disclosure in spite of its disclosure obligations under the act. As a matter of policy and sound statutory interpretation, patentees cannot be allowed to game the system in this way." End quote. Although the Pfizer patent disclosed sildenafil as one of the nine especially preferred compounds, the Supreme Court held that the disclosure would not have enabled the public to make the same successful use of the invention as the inventor at the time of the application because the reader would not have known that sildenafil was the compound that was found to work. Even if a skilled reader had inferred that one of the compounds of Claims 6 and 7 was the compound actually shown to be effective in treating erectile dysfunction, he or she would not know which of Claims 6 or 7 contained the useful compound. Further testing would have been required to determine which of these two compounds was actually effective. Justice LaBelle had to determine whether or not Claim 7, the claim to sildenafil and sildenafil citrate, was supported by the disclosure. He turned to Section 36(1) of the Patent Act that requires that a patent shall be granted for one invention only. The same section notes that a patent should not be deemed to be invalid by reason only that it has been granted for more than one invention. A related section, Section 36(2.1), requires that patent applications describing and claiming more than one invention be divided out. From these sections, Justice LaBelle concluded that each claim should not be construed as a separate invention in every case. He said, "The conclusion that separate claims disclose separate inventions is contrary to the provisions of the Act and must be rejected." This is a great change from what the law had been in the Federal Court of Appeal. So looking at the Pfizer patent, what is the invention when you have Claim 1 claiming 260 quintillion compounds and Claim 7 that only claims one, sildenafil citrate? LaBelle held that that question is answered by the courts considering the specification as a whole to determine whether the disclosure of the invention is sufficient. And the specification as a whole must be examined to determine whether sildenafil and the other compounds claimed in the patent are linked so as to form a single general inventive concept. So in the Teva decision, Justice LaBelle first held that the invention was the use of sildenafil to treat erectile dysfunction. He then went on to decide that the use of sildenafil and the other compounds for the treatment of erectile dysfunction comprised one inventive concept. He eventually concluded that if the Pfizer patent was viewed as a whole, there was only one invention, the use of the compound or compounds that were effective in treating erectile dysfunction. He then examined the validity of Claim 7 by looking to see whether the disclosure identified sildenafil as the compound that worked. Because it didn't, he said the disclosure was insufficient. Having made that determination, Justice LaBelle then went and did something that was unprecedented under Canada's Patent Medicine Notice of Compliance Act. He declared the Pfizer patent in its entirety to be invalid and void. Normally, in Patent Medicine Notice of Compliance proceedings, the court says that the plaintiff has not made out its case and that the minister is free to issue the notice of compliance. Until the decision in Teva, it was believed that PMNOC proceedings were like applications for judicial review and didn't provide for a final determination of invalidity or infringement. Now, Pfizer responded to the Supreme Court invalidity decision by filing a motion to ask for an amendment to the judgment or a rehearing on the issue of the remedy granted. At the same time, though, in separate proceedings for impeachment of the Pfizer patent, Apotex, another Canadian generic, brought a motion for summary judgment based on the Supreme Court decision. Justice Zinn of the federal court considered himself to be bound by the Supreme Court's decision that the Pfizer patent had an insufficient disclosure, and he declared the Pfizer patent, again perhaps overzealously, in its entirety to be invalid and void. If future courts allow declarations of invalidity in patent medicine notice of compliance proceedings, in future we'll probably see something else that's new, appeals from these decisions by patentees to the Federal Court of Appeal. So to summarize, what lessons do we learn from the Teva and Pfizer case? First of all, the Pfizer patent was very unusual in that it did not identify the product that had actually been made and found to work by Pfizer. Now generic sildenafil, the active ingredient in Viagra, has arrived in Canada. Had Pfizer simply added one word to its disclosure, quote, one of the especially preferred compounds, sildenafil, induces penile erection in impotent males, end quote, its patent likely would have been held valid. Why it didn't do so is not part of the record. Clearly, to avoid this problem in the future, patent disclosures should clearly identify what chemical compounds embodying the invention have, in fact, been made, so as to satisfy the statutory requirement to correctly and fully describe the invention and its operation or use as contemplated by the inventor. That's our podcast for this month. For further information on the Viagra decision, and for information on our other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.